Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
I barely made it home in time. One minute, I was singing along to the radio. And the next, I was staring, slack-jawed, at the most menacing storm clouds I'd ever seen. As someone born and raised in Vermont, I was no stranger to snow squalls. But there was something foreboding about the dark clouds blowing in over the mountains. After reaching my house, I opened my car door and stepped out into a cold evening. The wind lashed at my face and made a terrible howling in my ears as I raced up the steps and slipped through the front door to my house. "Just in time," Luke said to me in greeting. My husband was staring in front of the living room window, surveying the mountains beyond our city. By the time I walked over to him, I could barely see two streets down. Seemed like we would be spending the evening inside. "Came out of nowhere," I commented. Before I so much as set my bag down, I heard the doggy door open. We didn't own any pets, but we often entertained visits from a neighborhood cat who Luke had called Rigatoni. Sure enough, an old orange cat soon appeared in our living room, leaving a trail of muddy paw prints as he trotted over to Luke. "Ah, the serial couch surfer returns. Too cold out there for you?" he asked the cat, currently rubbing a head against his shin, who meowed as if in affirmation. Tony wasn't terribly fond of most people, but Luke had a way with animals. He reached down to pet her, eliciting a melody of purrs from the contented cat. "Come on," he said, standing. "I'll fix you some dinner." "Thank God, I'm starving." "I wasn't talking to you," Luke said with a warm laugh, walking into the back of the house to fetch some cat food for Tony. Half an hour later, just as Luke and I had finally sat down to eat, we heard the doggy door open once again. I raised a brow at my husband. Tony was our only regular four-legged visitor. I wondered who else could have let themselves inside our home. I didn't have to wonder for long. Seconds later, a border collie tore into the dining room, barking and whining with urgency. Luke and I rose sharply to our seats at the table, watching the dog as it came to a stop in the corner of the room. I realized as the poor creature lowered its head and tucked its tail between its legs that I recognized it. "Hey, that's Mrs. Johnson's dog," I said, rounding the table to check if the dog was hurt. "Tucker?" "Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I see her walking him all the time." I crouched down next to Tucker and slowly reached out my arm. To my surprise, the usually sweet-tempered border collie pulls its lips back in a snarl, lunging forward slightly and snapping his teeth. It was a warning, not an attempt to hurt me, but I backed off all the same. Luke shot me a worried look. "He's, usually more mild-mannered. I'll give her a call and let her know he's with us." Luke left the room to grab his phone while I studied Tucker from a safe distance, looking for signs of injury. His frantic barks had been replaced by occasional mournful whines. He was no longer racing around, seemingly content with his place in the corner, but his posture remained fearful and defensive. It was hard to tell with the way he was carrying, but I saw no visible wounds on him. "Do you have signal?" Luke shouted from another room. I took my phone out of my pocket to check, and to my surprise, I didn't. We had generally reliable coverage, and I couldn't remember the last time I'd lost cell service. I tried restarting my phone, walking around at different spots in the house and turning airplane mode on and off. Nada. Unfortunately, if it was affecting both of us, it was probably an issue with our service provider, meaning there was little we could do. I was about to ask if he still had Wi-Fi on his phone, when a light but urgent tapping sound filled the room. I listened for a moment, trying to place the origin of the sound, and soon traced it to the bathroom, or more specifically, the bathroom window. When I got there, I saw a small, fuzzy animal standing on the windowsill and scratching fervently at the glass. What in the world? The little creature didn't seem to notice my presence. I took another step forward into the bathroom, and I realized as I approached that the animal had torn right through the window screen. No cell service, no Wi-Fi, no nothing. At least the lights are on. Luke trailed off as he entered the room, looking over my shoulder at the frantic creature. Is that a weasel? I asked my resident animal lover, who shook his head. Pretty sure that's a marten. Neat. I was about to compliment his identification skills before I looked over and saw the look in his eyes. Don't ask me what I think you're about to ask me. Please, they're endangered, you know. This isn't Noah's Ark, Luke. We can't shelter every animal in Vermont. I swear, the rodent took a break from ripping through my window screen to glare at me. I glared right back. Beside, this little thing here looks rabid. Luke and I spent a couple minutes arguing. I wasn't keen on taking in any more impromptu guests, but Luke was adamant on saving it from the storm. There's something off about how desperately he's trying to get in, he said. It might be on the verge of freezing to death or something. After a while, he convinced me to take pity on the marten. I had to admit, the way it was throwing itself against the glass was a little unsettling. Reluctantly, I opened the window and allowed it to squeeze through the hole in the screen. However, I didn't realize that the marten wasn't the only creature waiting to get inside. Before I could shut the window, a flurry of about 20 mice surged into the bathroom from the hole. They must have been sitting on the sill as well, but I guess I overlooked them, mistaking their fluffy white bodies for snow. I jumped backwards, swallowing a shriek as one of them landed right on my foot. Eventually, I managed to shut the window without stepping on any mice, but not before a red bird, a cardinal, I think, squeezed its way in as well. Stunned, I hurried after the animals as they made a beeline for the center of the house. When I entered the dining room, I saw not only Tucker and the animals who had just burst in through the bathroom, but also a cat and two dogs that I didn't recognize. Cursing, I realized that they must have entered through the doggy door, so I yelled out to Luke to lock it as I tried to make sense of the scene in front of me. The animals gave each other a wide berth. The cat didn't so much as look at the mice, nor did the dog seem at all interested in the cat. All of them were cowering, shivering as they pressed themselves into corners or squeezed into whatever hiding spot they could find. The dogs whined, the mice squeaked, even the cardinal was making a strange, almost mournful sounding chirping noise. The only one who was behaving normally was Rigatoni, who I had to shoo away from the troop of mice hiding under the china cabinet. "The hell is going on?" Luke asked, and I had no explanation to offer. We'd had nasty storms before, but never had I seen one inspire such desperation in our local wildlife. After another failed attempt at coaxing Tucker out of his corner, I made my way to the living room and stared out the large window. A total whiteout stared back at me. I could only see a few feet out in every direction before the world was swallowed up by darkness and snow. It was eerie, but it was beautiful in a strange way. Hypnotic. It was easy to lose myself in thought as I watched the snow fall. What could have spooked the animal so much, I wondered. Could it really be the cold alone? The weather hadn't seemed all that bad. Sure, it had been cold outside, but not a blizzard cold. When I'd opened the bathroom window, I'd been distracted by the mice, but when I thought about it, I didn't remember a freezing cold wind sweeping into the house alongside our animal guests. I raised my arm, pressing the back of my hand against the glass, and then stilled. "Lou?" I quietly called out. He appeared around the corner seconds later, Tony cradled in his arms. "Is it just me, or is the glass warm?" Luke stepped closer, shifting to hold the cat in one arm and placing his free hand against the pane. He didn't respond, but the way his mouth set into a thin line told me that he felt the same thing. "What does this mean?" "I don't know." We both stood in silence for a while. The wind howled outside, but I had the sense that if I opened a window and stuck my hand out, it wouldn't feel cold. I didn't want to find out, though. Opening any windows or doors at that point seemed like a bad idea. In fact, I was about to check that all entry points to our house were secured, when Luke pointed at something outside. A large black mass ambled its way towards us. At first, I didn't understand what I was looking at. Its shape and gait were so strange that I thought I was looking at a brand new animal. But once it stepped fully into the faint glow emanating from the porch light, I realized that it was a black bear. Its lower jaw and one of its hind legs had been ripped off. And from the trail of blood it had left in its wake, it was clear that the wounds were fresh. The bear stumbled closer, stopping only inches from the glass. And with every wary step, I could make out another laceration on its body. I watched in horror as the massive creature stared directly at us with a look in its eyes that it could only be described as pleading. I held its gaze for a few seconds, and then the creature collapsed onto its side. A puddle of dark red pooled outward from its body, and soon the strange expansions and contractions of its ribcage ceased. Never once did it look away from us as it bled out and died. There was a long silence before Luke and I dared to speak. "You think," Luke began, "you think that's what the animals were afraid of?" I hoped so, but something in my gut told me that it wasn't. After all, even if that was the creature they'd been running from, the question still remained. What could have inflicted that level of trauma on a black bear of that size? "I think we should get away from the windows." As we made our way to the middle of the house, the lights flickered once, twice, and then abruptly went out altogether. We were plunged suddenly into darkness, and it seemed to put the animals even more on edge than before. Their squeaks and whines increased in volume. As I procured two flashlights from our kitchen cabinet, I handed one to my husband, and then the two of us took to the dining room, sitting on the floor with our backs against one of the walls. Luke was calm on the surface, but I could tell that the strangeness of the situation was causing him distress. At least Tony's presence seemed to bring him some peace of mind. For some reason, she was unaffected by whatever ailed the others. I studied her as she relaxed in Luke's lap, her eyes closing as he absentmindedly stroked her fur. Why was it that she was unafraid? She had come to our house right before the blizzard set in. whereas the rest of the animals likely had been outside for longer. Had they seen something out in the storm? If they had, could it have been the same thing that killed the bear? "Hey," Luke's shaky voice broke through my thoughts. "Do you hear that?" I didn't hear anything. And then I realized I didn't hear anything. No wailing of the wind, no sounds from the animals, nothing. It was like the whole world had suddenly gone quiet. I looked around the room. All of the animals were so still, it was as if they were afraid to move. I clicked my flashlight off, wanting to attract as little attention as possible, and Luke followed suit. For a moment, we just sat there in the dark, listening. And then, I heard a voice. "Hello?" Clear as day, the voice of a person was calling to us from outside our house. "Hello? Anyone in there?" it asked, its tone far too nonchalant for someone weathering the full brunt of a blizzard. "I need some help out here." Next to me, Luke shifted, as though he were about to stand up. I reached out and grabbed a hold of his arm, grabbing Tony and pulling Luke back down to the floor. There wasn't a chance in hell I was about to let him investigate the voice. It was so strangely quiet that I could hear the crunching of footsteps in the snow as the person moved outside. "Please," the voice said. It had gotten closer, like it was circling the house. "Please, I really need help. Can I just come in for a minute? It's so cold out here." My grip tightened on Luke's arm. The complete lack of emotion in the voice's tone sending a chill up my spine. He reached over, holding my hand in his, as the source of the voice moved even closer. "Come on now. Don't you have room for one more?" It was right outside the dining room window. I closed my eyes like a coward, not wanting to see whatever it was about to step into view. Next to me, there was a single, sharp intake of breath. For what felt like an eternity, neither of us moved. And then there was a light chuckle from outside the window. There were more footsteps, but this time they were moving away from us, and they seemed to be taking the silence with them. The wind remembered itself, returning with a howling vengeance in the visitor's absence. Luke's hand had gone slack in mine, but I held onto it for a long time, sitting there with my eyes shut tight. It must have been an hour before I dared to open my eyes and breathe normally again. "Are you okay?" I finally asked. No response. I tried asking again, a little louder, and still, my husband didn't respond. "Luke?" When I clicked on the flashlight, I saw Luke staring at the window, his face twisted into an expression of horror I'd never seen before. His skin was pale, and his body was rigid as a corpse. And try as I did, I couldn't get him to respond to me in any way. His look of sheer terror never once changed, even as I carried him to the car and drove us as fast as I could to the hospital. The doctor said it was a stroke. Of course, I was incredulous that such a thing could happen to my fit, non-smoking 29-year-old husband. But no one could offer me a better explanation. For the next few days, I waited for a recovery that never came. Then the days turned into weeks, the weeks into months, and the months into years. While Luke regained some very minimal motor control, blinking and twitching his fingers, it was clear that he would never be the same. I became his full-time caretaker, spending my days attending to all of his needs and my nights praying that he would make a miraculous recovery. As of this evening, 5 years have passed since the storm. Old Rigatoni is still alive and kicking somehow, and her visits always seem to make Luke perk up just a little bit. She's sleeping on his chest as I tell this, taking care of him in her own way. I'm glad to have her around, but even though I try not to be superstitious, her presence always brings me back to the night of the blizzard. I think about Tucker, who ran away after the storm passed and was never seen again. I think about the marten and the mice and the bear, and the way all of them acted like they were fleeing from something terrible. I think about the look on Luke's face, and I can't help but wonder if they all saw the same thing. Maybe Luke saw something he wasn't meant to, something that his brain had destroyed itself trying to comprehend. I look at my husband, the love of my life, and can't help but mourn what was taken from me that night. If I had opened my eyes, if I had been brave enough to look, would I have met the same fate? "What did you see?" I ask him, like I have 1,000 times before. I never get an answer.